You're listening to Sipping on Some Crime podcast, hosted by Aaron. This podcast covers sensitive and triggering subjects, explicit language, and mature content which may not be suitable for children. As always, all parties are innocent until proven guilty.
Today, I will be covering the case of Carolyn Jeanette Dunn Mowdy. This is one of those cases where there's very little reported about the who of the victim, let alone reported at all. There's much more reported about the circumstances of her disappearance and death. That being said, unfortunately, I don't have as much information on Carolyn as I would like, but I still think it is vital to share her story in hopes it brings her family answers and Carolyn the justice she deserves. So let's dive in. Carolyn Jeanette Dunn was born December 24, 1953, in Philadelphia in Neshoba County. The Dunn family would move to Sunflower County sometime after her birth. Carolyn's mother, also named Carolyn, would go missing in 1964 when little Carolyn was just 11 years old. The Dunn family never saw or heard from her ever again. As to whether or not she was officially reported missing at the time, I could not find any record. In 1971, Carol, who is now residing in Indiola, Mississippi, would give birth to her first daughter, Carolyn Denise Mowdy, who would unfortunately pass during childbirth. Carolyn would give birth to her second daughter, Carolyn Jeanette, who family calls Jeanette, and a few years later, Edna, the youngest daughter, would be born in the summer of 1974. Carolyn, who at this time was just shy of her 21st birthday, was married to the father of her girls. His name was David Earl Mowdy. Family believes they were married around 1970. There's no information on their personal relationship dynamics, but we do know that David was in and out of jail a lot, and this continued into Jeanette and Edna's childhood for some time. It was summertime in 1974, and just 3 days after giving birth to Edna, Carolyn would walk away from her life, leaving behind her husband, her newborn daughter Edna, that was still in the hospital, and 3-year-old Jeanette with no warning. Jeanette says she does remember someone. Even as little as she was, she knows there was a someone that her mother left with. She says she knows that her mother did not leave alone. But as far as any specific details, she cannot recall them as she was only 3 at the time. David would end up filing for divorce from Carolyn in September of 74, just months after Carolyn left. He would be granted the divorce in November 1975. Both Jeanette and Edna would be raised by their father, whose presence was sparse due to the time in and out of jail, and in 1981, David would be convicted of a capital offense, given time in prison, and would pass away in prison serving his sentence. Eventually, Edna and Jeanette would be placed with their grandmother. Jeanette says her grandmother helped raise them, but that she was the one that really stepped up and raised Edna in her parents' absence. It was a lot for the girls to go through so young, but they stuck together. Knowing that their mother walked away from them and chose not to contact them for years made both of the girls feel very hurt and angry for years to come. But even in that hurt and anger, they wanted to find her. They missed her. They loved her. As the girls got older, they searched for her again. And again, and again, with no luck. 46 years would pass before finally someone had an answer as to where Carolyn was. It would be a detective and a crime scene technician out of Florida that, through some dedicated work, would put together the pieces that would lead them down the path to the answers they had been seeking for so long. Davie City Police Detective Eddie Velasquez and crime scene technician Bertha Hurtado worked with the Florida Davie City Police Department in 2020 to form a cold case unit to focus on cases that hadn't gotten the attention and dedication they needed over the years. And the first file they decided to work on was a 1975 case file of a Jane Doe. They said they were determined to put their whole hearts into this case, and they truly did. The autopsy of her death was listed as a drowning, but no determination of murder, accidental, or suicide. There were a few details on this Jane Doe, but one detail that Hurtado and Velasquez were certain about was that she had been murdered. The canal where her remains were recovered from is not very deep, and they both could not see suicide or drowning as a possibility. When they walked the site in person, they just knew it was a homicide investigation. According to the original reports, the young Jane Doe's body was discovered in a canal on 2600 Southwest 154th Avenue in Davie, Florida, on December 23, 1975, just 2 days before Christmas. The Miami Herald would run a story on this Jane Doe describing the clothing and jewelry found on her at the time in great detail, hoping someone would recognize it and come forward to ID her. But that didn't happen. Based on the file, it stated that Jane Doe had been cremated in the 1970s, which was going to be a challenge for Hurtado and Velasquez moving forward. But as they dug deeper, they found that they did have human remains listed under evidence. When they followed that lead, they did find that originally the maxilla bone, the bone that forms your upper jaw, and the mandible bone, the largest bone in the human skull that keeps the teeth in place, were held onto as evidence. Hurtado said, quote, "There were certain things we could do to identify or look at certain individual characteristics on these bones and see if these characteristics were unique," unquote. From those bones, the Davie Police Department would create a composite sketch and release it to the public with the original clothing description and details of where she was found in hopes of generating leads. But again, no one came forward. They weren't going to give up, so Hurtado and Velasquez went back to the drawing board and dug deeper. They decided to work backwards, again, this time starting at the medical examiner's office to see if maybe they had more information on their Jane Doe than they had in their file. And that hunch was the best one they had. When they visited the medical examiner's office and looked through their files, they discovered that this Jane Doe had not been cremated, but buried in a cemetery in Broward County. But once again, one more obstacle would be presented. They now knew she was buried in their county, but where exactly? The next step Hurtado and Velasquez took was to call local funeral homes to see if they could help them identify where exactly she was buried, and with their help, they were able to find her burial plot. And she was just 3 miles from the Davie Police Department. Now that they knew where her remains were, they pushed forward to identify their Jane Doe. At this point, they knew their next steps were DNA and a better sketch if they were going to get any help from the public about how she ended up in that canal. They both knew at this point the most important step to solving this would be to get an exhumation warrant. They also got a few forensic anthropologists on board to be ready to create a new sketch. Once the exhumation warrant was approved and they were able to get a sketch created relatively quickly and reached out to the public, but once again, that sketch didn't bring any new leads forward. At the same time, Hurtado and Velasquez got to work getting the DNA extracted with the help of Parabon Nanolabs and C.C. Moore. Moore began her career in genetics helping adopted and abandoned children reunite with their birth parents, but over the years, her focus in helping others shifted more towards cold cases. Moore said, quote, "This work is more sad when compared to my work with adoptees because it's giving answers in death, reuniting the families in death rather than in life. But it's still very much the same process and in line with the same goals that I have always believed were very important," unquote. However, it wasn't easy sailing after the extraction of Jane Doe's DNA. They found that the DNA that was extracted had been contaminated by bacterial DNA, which can actually degrade the victim's DNA. Moore said, quote, "The scientists go through the data and try to separate out bacterial DNA and fix the degraded sections of the genome to create the file that we ultimately need to upload to GEDmatch. This one took a lot of work by our scientists at Parabon. A lot happens in some of these cases before they come to me because I don't start working until it's uploaded to GEDmatch. There can be a lot of work behind the scenes just to try to get that DNA into the right format so that I can do my work. Fortunately, they were successful," unquote. There were many challenges even this far in the process. Moore said that several people in the database shared matches to their Doe's DNA. Moore said, quote, "In these databases, we don't expect to get an immediate family member or a close family member. We're just hoping for a second, third, or fourth cousin to this unknown individual. We get a list of people who share DNA. Normally, it would be really straightforward. I would build the matches family tree, figure out the common ancestors between them, and then build forward in time from those ancestors to find the missing woman," unquote. Moore said she got leads in the beginning, and she was hopeful and excited, thinking they would find a match in days. But then days turned to weeks, and weeks turned to months. Eventually, Moore was able to narrow it down and trace the DNA profile to a family tree in Neshoba County. Now she had to pass on the task to Hurtado and Velquez to seek out the family members and start investigating into whether or not they had missing family members. When they reached out to the family members, none of them knew of anyone missing, but luckily one family member agreed to come in and provide their DNA to be uploaded and compared. Moore said, quote, "When we got his DNA analyzed, he was an even closer relative than I had previously. That was super helpful. That allowed me to focus on a different branch, one related to him, but not his immediate family," unquote. Again, Moore would create a list of family members for Hurtado and Velquez to reach out to, and that's when they would learn of Carolyn's disappearance in 1974. Carolyn's sister would be contacted by detectives who would reach out to her nieces, Jeanette and Edna. It sounds like a simple process at the time, but Moore said, quote, "It was really complicated. If those detectives had not been so determined and so willing to follow up, we wouldn't have found her," unquote. After speaking with Carolyn's daughters, they were pretty positive they had the right person. But to be 100% sure, they would collect DNA from her daughters, and that's when they were able to make a positive match. Their Jane Doe now had a name, Carolyn Jeanette Dunn Mowdy. In a surprise twist no one saw coming, while researching Carolyn's DNA, they did find out that Carolyn's mother, who had vanished just 10 years before her own daughter, that decided to walk away from her life, had also ended up in Florida, and she had died in 2006. Her mother was alive and well 42 more years after she went missing. Investigators still don't know if that has any connection to her own daughter ending up in Florida as well. Did she know her mom was there? We may never know. For Edna and Jeanette, it brings some peace to them to know where Carolyn ended up. Both sisters said over the years their hurt had turned to forgiveness, and now they just wanted justice for their mother. Hurtado and Velquez aren't done with this case either. Velquez said, quote, "That's something that we're going through now. It's obvious that things were so much different back then as far as evidence and DNA and stuff like that. We're definitely working different angles from this point forward. We're working towards that direction, at least trying to identify who was involved in her murder," unquote. Hurtado and Velquez said they cannot reveal much about what they have in their ongoing investigation, but they want to know what brought Carolyn 15 hours away from her home in the Mississippi Delta to Davie, Florida. Velquez says, "That's what we don't know. There are allegations, but we never go off of allegations." Edna and Jeanette would go to Davie to meet with investigators, and they would be given some of their mother's belongings from that day. A mood ring and a necklace. Edna wears her mother's necklace, and Jeanette wears her mood ring. Both Jeanette and Edna would visit the canal where their mother was found one day before her 22nd birthday. Both girls would say there was no way she drowned in that canal, and that she had to have been pushed in there. The sisters had their mother's remains cremated so they could bring her back home with them. They said they both feel a deep spiritual connection to their mother, but this is not closure. They have so many more questions. Edna said, quote, "I need to find out if she had a place down there. She had to lay her head somewhere before she even got killed. She had to have a home," unquote. For Edna, the little baby left in the hospital just days old, she still wishes she could meet her mother face to face. Edna says, quote, "I would go meet her. If she didn't want to have anything to do with me, that would be okay. But I did want to meet her and ask her why she left. When I talk to my mama, I say, I love you, I forgive you, and I wanted to meet you," unquote. For Carolyn and her daughters, this story is far from over. All involved in her case are in agreement that someone decided to take Carolyn's life. For her daughters and for Carolyn, we need to tell her story because someone knows something. And it's time they come forward and help these girls find their answers and their peace. As always, I will include links and sources on the show notes and on my page if you would like to take a deeper dive into this case. Unfortunately, on this one, there really isn't much out there, which is the biggest problem to getting this case solved because with no coverage, how can we get the community of Davie, Florida, and the surrounding areas involved? So please share Carolyn's story in whatever format you're most comfortable with, and let's help shine a light on her case. Don't forget when you see those missing and murdered posts on social media to like, share, and retweet. Every time we share a face, we get closer to solving a case. Until next time.